Good morning, and welcome to the Wednesday, March 17th meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, will you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
She'll be late.
Okay. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damon.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan. Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott is excused. Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Erickson, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Tuesday, March 16th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move the approval of the minutes from March 16.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Erickson motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I do have an issue with the way the minutes are not necessarily formatted, but in particular the way the votes are laid out. I don't find it as easy to follow when the ayes and the nays are just put in parentheses next to our names instead of dividing the ayes from the nays. It's just something that has always bothered me when they're not grouped. So it's just a comment. I'm okay. Sure that you've established your style and you want to stick to that. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Any further discussion to the Erickson motion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from Tuesday, March 16th, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, today in committee, we'll be hearing House File 1081 from Chair Richardson. We aren't currently in possession of the bill, but wanted to set aside time on our agenda to hear it informationally. With that, Chair Richardson, please introduce your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will just do a walkthrough to provide an overview for members, and starting with Article 1, which is focused on general education. Section 1 relates to student absences for religious holidays and requires a school board to provide annual notice to parents of the school district's policies relating to student absences for religious observances. Section 2 clarifies that a school board may consider community, religious, or cultural observances when adopting their annual school calendar. Section 3 requires the commissioner to provide an annual report of the American Indian student data using the state count of American Indian students, which is more accurate than the federal count. Section 4 requires the state count of American Indian students to be used to calculate American Indian education aid. And Section 5 amends the reference to the process to appeal a denial of certification of a third-party vendor's products and services, and Section 6 amends the county auditor's timeline to report to the Commissioner of Education an excess tax increment distributed to a school district. Moving on to Article 2, which focuses on education excellence. Section 1 allows tribal nations to access educational data about tribally enrolled or descendant students to the extent necessary to support the educational attainment of those students. Section 2 requires records transmitted to a student's new school to include any records of pupil withdrawals and to include information on services a student may need in order to prevent inappropriate behavior from recurring. Section 3 modifies requirements for instructors. Section 4 requires schools to adopt the state's art standards rather than local standards, and also adds media art to the list of courses that the district must offer. Section 5 clarifies the Commissioner of Education's authority to amend statewide rules on academic standards. Section 6 states that Algebra 1 taken in the eighth grade does not bear high school credit, and it also requires that part of the 3.5 credits in social studies currently required for high school graduation include a credit for a course in government and citizenship in either 11th or 12th grade. And this requirement would first apply to students who begin the ninth grade in the 2022-2023 school year and later. And it also provides some further options to fulfill this requirement. It also requires that art standards be state standards rather than local standards. And finally, within that section, it requires that students begin beginning ninth grade in the 2022-2023 school year and later complete a personal finance course for credit during their senior year. And districts can provide that personal finance course through online instruction, in-person instruction, or a combination of the two. Section 7 amends the world's best workforce statute by adding several definitions, including ethnic studies curriculum, rigorous, anti-racist, culturally sustaining, institutional racism, and on track for graduation. Section 8 adds performance measures to the world's best workforce statute and requires districts to report on the participations of students' performance in honors or gifted and talented programming, the number and percentage of students by subgroup who are on track for graduation, and participation of students in advanced placement, IB, and dual enrollment programs, including PSEO and concurrent enrollment in the 2023-2024 school year. Section 9 requires districts' world's best workforce plans to include ethnic studies, to include an ethnic studies curriculum using culturally responsive methods. Section 10 requires the world's best workforce district advisory committee to recommend strategies on curriculum and learning and work environments. Section 11 establishes an equitable school enhancement grant program to support the implementation of the world's best workforce strategies. And it also defines several terms as well and requires the grants to be used to support equitable anti-racist practices. Section 12 modifies the gifted and talented statute by adding services to programs. And it also requires rather than suggests that assessments and procedures be sensitive and equitable to underrepresented groups and expands groups explicitly included in the definition of underrepresented groups. Section 13 eliminates the requirement that statewide tests include the below and above average or below and above test items. And Section 14 provides flexibility in administering statewide assessments by requiring the commissioner to develop and publish security and privacy procedures for students and educators to support remote testing. Section 15 requires districts and schools selected to participate in the National Assessment of Educational Progress or similar assessments to do so. Sections 16 modifies the demographic categories for students reporting and clarifies that ethnicities, that data is student data, is disaggregated by must be determined on a 10-year cycle beginning in 2026 based on the largest population subgroups using the most recent 5-year data set of the American Community Survey. Section 17 strikes an obsolete reference to dates in federal law. Section 18 prohibits a school district or individual school from adopting an American Indian mascot. Section 19 defines in-school suspension and out-of-school suspension and requires an out-of-school suspension to include a readmission plan. Section 20 defines non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices as alternatives to removal or dismissal that require school officials to intervene and redirect and support the student's behavior before removal or dismissal. Section 21 defines pupil withdrawal agreements and limits a withdrawal agreement to a 12-month period. Section 22 prohibits dismissal of a student in kindergarten through third grade unless non-exclusionary discipline measures have been exhausted and there's an ongoing serious safety threat to a child or others. Section 23 requires that schools use non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices before dismissal proceeding or a pupil withdrawal agreement. Section 24 states that alternative education services are required when a student is dismissed for more than 5 consecutive days. Section 25 requires administrators to ensure alternative education services are required when a student is dismissed for more than 5 consecutive days. And Section 26 requires school officials to give suspended students the opportunity to complete work assigned during the suspension and receive full credit for those assignments. Section 27 requires written notice of intent to expel a student to describe the non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices that were offered to avoid the expulsion, and also requires the department a list of legal resources to be posted on the department's website. Section 28 requires the admission or readmission plan to include measures to improve the student's behavior and also list out optional elements of the plan and require that the plan include parental involvement. Section 29 requires districts to report pupil withdrawal agreements and non-exclusionary disciplinary practices to the commissioner. Section 30 requires the commissioner to issue guidance on engaging stakeholders to review and revise discipline policies that are restorative and responsive, and requires the policy to include non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices. And it also requires schools to ensure students are receiving alternative educational services to make sure students are still eligible for school-based mental health services. Section 31 defines prone restraint, and it also prohibits a district employee or agent from using prone restraints, and it also prohibits some physical holding. Section 32 requires school boards to annually review and revise school discipline policies and include the parameters for when input into discipline decisions by those involved in an incident is allowed. It also eliminates mandatory grounds for removal and eliminates minimum consequences for violations of code of conduct. Section 33 prohibits post-secondary institutions that make admission decisions based on a student's race, color, and creed from enrolling PSEO students. Section 34 modifies the dates a student must notify the district of their intent to enroll in the post-secondary program by May 30th for the fall term or October 30th for the spring term. Section 35 reduces the withdrawal absence period from the first 14 days to the first 10 days, which speeds up the time that the district would have to stop payment to a post-secondary institution. Section 36 defines hybrid learning. Section 37 and 38 amend the learning year programs, and it strikes references to an extended school year calendar and also strikes references to charter schools from statute, since they're not authorized to provide learning year programs. Section 39 modifies the description of instruction in American Indian language, history, and culture by eliminating the word supplemental. Sections 40 and 41 relate to the American Indian Parent Advisory Committee. It defines the committee and requires the majority of members to be parents of American Indian children. Section 42 clarifies the duties of the Director of American Indian Education may be performed by a designee. Section 43 requires a district or charter to allow an American Indian student to wear Indian regalia, tribal regalia, or items of cultural significance at a graduation ceremony. Section 44 modifies the achievement and integration plan requirements. Sections 45 and 46 relate to restrictive procedures, which currently only apply to students with disabilities, and this would broaden its application to all students and would also prohibit using restrictive procedures on a child younger than five. Section 47 allows an American Indian person to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco in observance of traditional spiritual or cultural practices. Section 48 extends the timeline for the commissioner to post the accountability data for the current school year to October 1st. Section 49 requires the commissioner to suspend review and revision of academic standards and benchmarks in math and revise physical education and arts academic standards until June 1st, 2022. Section 50 is instructions to the reviser to renumber statutory revisions on statewide assessments, and Section 51 repeals subdivisions that require districts to develop strategies relating to emotional or behavioral disorders and graduation rates. Article 3 is focused on teachers. And Section 1 of Article 3 and focuses on increasing the percentage of Teachers of Color Act. It establishes a state goal to increase the percentage of teachers of color and indigenous teachers by 2 points each year, so that Minnesota will have a teaching workforce that more closely reflects its diverse student population and ensures that all students have an equitable access to effective and diverse teachers by 2040. It also requires Pelsby to work with MDE and the Office of Higher Education to publish a report every other year on the outcomes of any programs they administer that have the purpose of increasing the racial and ethnic diversity of the state's teaching workforce. Section 2 requires school boards to adopt a written policy that prohibits discrimination or discipline for a teacher or a principal on the basis of incorporating into curriculum contributions by persons in a protected class. Section 3 requires teachers to hold a license or a permission aligned to a content area and scope of their assignment in a district or charter school. Section 4 defines teacher. Section 5 defines field. Section 6 defines shortage area. Section 7 defines teacher preparation programs. And Section 8 states that teacher preparation providers include both post-secondary and alternative providers. Section 9 defines districts as a public school district or a charter school. Section 10 focuses on teacher preparation providers, and and requires them to be approved by Pelsby. The board is also required to adopt and revise rules outlining the criteria by which programs offered may be approved. Pelsby is also required to report annually to the education committees of the legislature on the performance of teacher candidates and submit a biennial report on the alternative teacher preparation providers. Section 11 is a technical change to the definition of teachers and states that the definition does not apply to certain other sections. Section 12 modifies the definition of qualified teacher as having a license or permission. Section 13 relates to Pelsby's requirement to issue licenses to substitute teachers. Section 14 focuses on background studies and requires Pelsby to initiate a criminal history background study on all first-time educator licenses. Section 15 relates to licensure via portfolio. Section 16 requires applications for Tier 1 licenses to be submitted by both the applicant and the district. Section 17 modifies the exemptions from bachelor's degree requirements for the Tier 1 pathway by replacing the reference to career and technical education or career pathway to a specific exemption by state statute or rule. Section 18 goes more into exemptions from the bachelor's degree and adds the exemption for teachers for languages and culture and art and applicants enrolled in a state-approved teacher preparation program classified as a residency model aligned to the scope and field of the assignment. Section 19 modifies the renewal requirements for a Tier 1 license, requires districts to demonstrate professional development supports are provided to Tier 1 teachers. Section 20 requires Pelsby to review applications and allows them to begin reviewing them before July 1, and also eliminates requirement that a decision be made within 30 days for those Tier 1 licenses. Section 21 allows Tier 1 teachers to be in the same bargaining unit as other teachers. Section 22 replaces the requirement that a Tier 1 teacher participate in the district's existing mentorship program and professional development, and requires a district that hires a Tier 1 teacher to provide mentorship aligned with board-adopted criteria. Section 23 and 24 modify the requirements for a Tier 2 license, and it retains the bachelor degree exemption for CTE teachers, and it expands it for teachers of oral languages and culture who are native speakers of the language and an art teacher with 5 years of work experience. Section 25 limits renewal of Tier 2 licenses to 2 rather than 3, but allows a license to teach CTE to be renewed an unlimited number of times. And it also requires teachers to participate in culturally competent training and mental illness training for all renewals. Section 26 requires Pelsby to review applications before July 1st related to Tier 2 licenses and eliminates requirements that they make a decision within 30 days. Section 27 replaces the requirement that Tier 2 teachers participate within the district's mentorship program and provides that Tier 2 teacher mentorship be aligned with board adopted criteria. Section 28 eliminates the licensure exam as a requirement for Tier 3 licensure. It broadens exemptions from the bachelor's degree to include a teacher training, any course exempt by statute or rule. It also requires Pelsby to issue a Tier 3 license to an applicant who has completed student teaching comparable to Minnesota requirements and has either one, completed a teacher preparation program from a culturally specific minority serving institution and is eligible for a teacher license in another state, or two, has completed a university teacher prep program in another country and has taught at least 2 years. Section 29 allows an applicant to meet coursework requirements with 3 years of teaching experience under a Tier 2 license and evidence of summative evaluations that did not place the teacher on an improvement process if the applicant fills a shortage area. Section 30 expands exemptions from the bachelor's degree for the following: a teacher of world languages and culture who's also a native speaker, and an art teacher with 5 years of relevant work experience. Section 31 requires a Tier 3 teacher to meet initial teacher renewal requirements in order to renew their license. Section 32 modifies what experience counts for a Tier 4 teacher, and it eliminates the use of teacher evaluation in the licensure process and requires applicants with Tier 3 licenses to complete their initial teacher renewal requirements. It also requires PELSB to issue a Tier 4 license to a candidate who has teaching experience in another state and achieved tenure or completed 3 consecutive years of employment for at least 120 days per year with a single employer. Section 33 requires Tier 4 teachers to complete continuing teacher renewal requirements in order to renew their license. Section 34 eliminates the requirement that Tier 4 teachers pass a skills exam and that a Tier 3 teacher pass pedagogy and content exams, and provides other options for the pedagogy and content exam requirements with a performance assessment. Section 35 requires teacher preparation providers to report annually on supports provided to persons enrolled in their program who do not pass license exams and request remedial assistance. And it also requires providers to provide remedial assistance on any licensing exam. Section 36 covers the expiration and renewals of Tier 3 and Tier 4 licenses. Section 37 is focused on teacher prep programs for bilingual and English as a second language teacher. Section 38 is focused on the exceptions for community education teachers and licensure requirements. Section 39 modifies the probationary period for a teacher who has taught for 3 consecutive years in one state and allows the teacher to obtain continuing contract status after serving a 1-year probationary period in a Minnesota school district instead of 3 years. Section 40 requires a district to adopt a rubric of performance standards for teacher practice, including on culturally responsive methodologies and at least three levels of performance. Section 41 allows a district to negotiate a contract with a 1-year probationary period for a teacher who has obtained tenure or completed 3 consecutive years of employment for at least 120 days per year with a single employer. Section 42 requires districts. Section 43, an unrequested leave of absence process, allows school districts and teachers' unions to agree to a process to exempt up to 5% of the district's employees from an unrequested leave of absence and non-renewal. It also requires the district and union to establish a committee to select educators to receive the exemption. And it also requires disputes over violations of procedures to be resolved through a grievance procedure and a collective bargaining agreement. Section 24, Come Teach in Minnesota, hiring bonuses, states the purpose of the bonus program to support districts and schools. It also requires a school district to verify that a hiring bonus is given to a teacher licensed in another state who qualifies for a Tier 3 or a Tier 4 license. And it sets out the amounts of the bonus, of $2,500 to $5,000 to an eligible teacher, and a bonus of $4,000 to $8,000 to an eligible teacher in a shortage area, and requires a teacher to be paid half the bonus when starting employment and half after 4 years of service. It also requires the commissioner to establish a process for districts or schools to seek reimbursement for hiring bonuses, and allows the department to conduct a pilot program to establish feasibility. Section 45 relates to the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color grant program and requires grants to be awarded for a 2-year grant period. Section 46 modifies the reporting dates for the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color grant program. Section 47 relates to grants for Grow Your Own programs. It establishes grants for three types of Grow Your Own programs to develop the teaching workforce that more closely reflects the diverse student population and ensures equitable access to effective and diverse teachers. It also defines eligible district and Grow Your Own program. There are grants for residency program that districts are able to apply to develop and maintain their program. There's also grants for programs that are serving adults and allows eligible districts or Head Start programs to apply for grants to support persons of color or American Indian persons to become licensed teachers or preschool teachers. Grants are also available for programs serving secondary students, and the grant procedures require the commissioner to give priority to districts or Head Start programs with the highest number or percentage of students who are of color or are American Indian. It also requires a special revenue fund for the Grow Your Own program and requires grant recipients to report to the commissioner. Section 48, the teacher mentorship and retention of effective teachers, modifies eligibility for the mentorship program grants and requires PELSB to prioritize grants for efforts to induct, mentor, and retain Tier 2 or Tier 3 teachers who are of color or American Indian, and Tier 2 or Tier 3 teachers in licensure shortage areas. And it allows the grants to be awarded for up to 24 months. Section 49 requires the principal evaluations to support and improve the principal's culturally responsive leadership practices. Section 50 is related to individualized education programs and requires a paraprofessional assigned to work alone with a student with a disability to be given paid time or time during the school day to review the student's individualized education plan or be briefed on the student's specific needs. It also requires a paraprofessional and other district staff employed to support students with disabilities to be provided at least 16 hours of paid orientation or professional development annually. Section 51 relates to the terms and conditions of employment and adds class size, student testing, and student to personnel ratios in Minnesota school districts to the mandatory terms of collective bargaining under PELRA. And it also requires school districts and union representatives of school districts and employees to meet and negotiate over these terms. This also applies to charter school class sizes. Section 52 is a repealer, and it focuses on school districts' reports to information by probationary teachers. Moving on to Article 4, charter schools. Section 1 defines charter management organization as a nonprofit entity that contracts with a charter school board to provide, manage, or oversee all or most of the charter school's educational design or implementation. It also defines education management organization as a for-profit entity and defines online education service provider as an organization that provides an online learning management system, virtual learning environment, or online student management system for a charter and services for the implementation and operation of an online education program for the charter. Section 2 requires charter schools to comply with the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act and to be subject to and comply with the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law in the same manner as school districts. Section 3 requires charter schools to comply with the Education for English Learners Act. Section 4 prohibits charter schools from using corporal punishment in the same manner as school districts. Section 5 clarifies that charter school authorizers may withdraw from being an authorizer before an end of their five-year evaluation by the commissioner. Section 6 allows the commissioner to prohibit authorizers on a corrective action plan from accepting applications to a establish a charter school or transfer a charter school from another authorizer and establishes an explicit timeline for the corrective action plan, which must last no longer than 130 business days. It also allows a charter school to transfer with a new authorizer if the current authorizer has been under a correction action plan for more than 130 business days, and allows the commissioner to terminate an authorizer's contract with the charter school if it fails to meet the corrective action plan specified by the deadline. Section 7 clarifies that charter school authorizers may withdraw from being an authorizer before the end of their five-year evaluation by the commissioner. Section 8 requires that charter schools include a market need and demand study that quantifies the need for the new program in their application to an authorizer, and it also defines the components of the study for a new school, grade, site expansion, or a new pre-K program. Section 9 specifies the terms and conditions under which an authorizer would charter a school, including the market research to address the need, demand, and potential market for the proposed charter school in the community where the school intends to locate. Section 10 specifies the need for the market need and demand study for adding grades or site expansion. Section 11 clarifies that admission to a charter school must be free to any person who resides within the state of Minnesota, and also specifies that Minnesota students have preference over out-of-state residents. Section 12 provides that a charter school must employ necessary teachers or contract with a cooperative to do so. Section 13 clarifies that a charter school can only lease space owned by the lessor and cannot enter into a sublease agreement. Section 14 requires the charter school's charter management organization or educational management organization submit an audit report to the commissioner annually by December 31st. Section 15 clarifies a closure plan under Chapter 317A. Moving on to Article 5, Special Education. Section 1 expands the qualifications for who is allowed to be employed by a district to provide ASL, English interpreting, or sign transliterating services to include holders of certified deaf interpreter certifications that are issued by the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf. It also adds interpreters who meet the requirements for employment to the definition of essential personnel for the purposes of special education aid. Section 2 requires a school board that is developing or updating a plan to provide on-site instruction, to prioritize on-site instruction for students with IEPs that require instruction in federal level 3 or 4 settings and are not demonstrating progress on their IEP, or students with disabilities who are identified as English learners. It also clarifies that school districts may provide services required by a student's IEP at a student's home, and if the school does provide those services, they qualify for special education funding. Districts providing these services must negotiate the terms and conditions of employment with the exclusive representative of the staff providing the services. It also requires a school district to consider how a student's disability may affect the student's ability to engage in distance instruction when determining whether to refer a student for a truancy program or services or reporting students for educational neglect. It provides a one-year extension of eligibility special education secondary transition program services for students with disabilities who would age out of eligibility for the program during the 2020-21 school year. If a student's IEP team determines further participation in the transition program would be appropriate, these programs provide not only employment, but in-person job training and independent life skill training to students with disabilities ages 18 to 21. Article 6 is focused on health and safety. Section 1 requires districts and charters to provide mental health instruction for students in grades 4 through 12 beginning July 1st, 2022. It requires a district and charter school provide presentations on suicide prevention or self-harm, use either of the resources provided by the commissioner or other evidence-based instruction. Section 2 requires districts to provide developmentally appropriate social-emotional learning instruction as part of their efforts to create a positive school climate. Section 3 requires the commissioner to develop and maintain resources to assist schools in implementing social emotional learning, including state level social emotional learning standards. Section 4 defines mental health and comprehensive school mental health systems. Section 5 defines multi-tiered systems of support and lists the required components of the framework. Section 6 requires school districts and charter schools to collaborate with parents and guardians of students with a diagnosed seizure disorder and to create a seizure action plan that acknowledges and prepares for the healthcare needs of the student. School employees and volunteers that would be responsible for the supervision or care of students with a diagnosed seizure disorder must be given notice and a copy of the seizure action plan, as well as the name of the employee identified to respond and the method by which the employee can be contacted in case of an emergency. It also requires schools to provide all principals, counselors, nurses, and teachers hired after July 1st, 2020 with self-study materials on seizure disorder signs, symptoms, medications, and appropriate responses. Section 7 requires MDE to employ a school mental health services lead who will assist schools in assessing their comprehensive school mental health plans, developing improvement plans to implement evidence-based mental health resources and tools and practices for the districts, and also to work within the districts to improve mental health infrastructure. Article 7 is focused on nutrition and libraries. Section 1 is on school shaming, meal shaming prevention, and it requires a policy to be developed, and it also requires participants in the school lunch or breakfast program not deny a meal to a child due to an outstanding meal balance or limit a student's participation in any school activity due to an outstanding meal balance. The section defines respectful treatment and requires that a school meal program not demean students participating in a school meal program. It also requires the Department of Education to send a letter of noncompliance to any school violating the requirements and requires the recipient to respond and remedy the practice within 60 days. Section 2 provides a definition of school libraries and school library media centers. And it also requires that a district and a charter school library or media center must employ a licensed media specialist or a licensed school librarian. Article 8 is focused on facilities. Section 1 requires school districts, charters, or non-public schools upon notification by the Department of Health or the PCA of an environmental hazard that may affect the health of students or staff, notify the school staff, students, and parents of the hazard as soon as practicable. And it also includes direction on how to include additional information about the hazard and any actions that may reduce potential harm to those affected. Article 9 relates to state agencies. Section 1 changes the number of PELSB members from 11 to 13 and restricts members must not serve more than two consecutive terms. Section 2 adds one teacher to the makeup of the PELSB board and requires three of the teacher members of the board be licensed in areas that represent current or emerging trends in education. Section 3 eliminates obsolete language relating to the PELSB office. Section 4 requires PELSB to approve teacher providers seeking to prepare candidates for teacher licensure in Minnesota. Section 5 amends requirements for register of licensed teachers. Section 6 requires PELSB to revise rules and add sections that require rulemaking, strikes requirements that PELSB adopt rules relating to grade levels licensed teacher may teach. Section 7 eliminates annual review requirements for permission for alternative education program teachers to teach in other content areas. Section 8 changes the date that PELSB must post a report on teacher preparation programs from June to July and modifies required summary data program providers must include. Section 9 clarifies reporting requirements on the number of candidates who have not passed a content or pedagogy exam and modifies the requirement to disaggregate data by eligibility for financial aid, and Section 10 strikes obsolete references to the licensing division of the Department of Education.
Chair Richardson, does that complete your
overview?
Very thorough. Thank you for that. Ms. Pera, I understand there's a technical amendment that has been developed for the bill and that you're prepared to review that for us and any other technical issues that may be related to this House file.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, there is an amendment. It's the A21-0104 amendment. This is a technical amendment. When the bill left the policy committee, there was an amendment that was divided, and part of it was withdrawn. So it should not have been engrossed, but it was engrossed into the bill, and so this amendment just takes that out. It's in Article 2. It amends the graduation requirements. So when this amendment is engrossed, or when this language appears in the finance omnibus, if it does, that would require credit of physical education, and it would reduce the number of elective requirements from 7 to 6.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pera. Now, members, questions, and please note, members, that Representative Bennett and Representative Drazkowski have joined us. Representative Erickson, you've been patient. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Richardson. You have done something that's unprecedented, that you're reading what usually we would have nonpartisan staff do for us, since they created the document from which you read. But you did a really nice job of reading all those pages. Anyway, my question is about Article 3, Section 44, although you called it 24 in your presentation, but it's on the Come Teach in Minnesota hiring bonuses. My question is, I have a couple of questions. Why is teacher effectiveness important in this particular proposal, but not in our tiered system? Would you comment on why that has been included and then eliminated on the present law that we have in place?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for the question. So the information related to those payments, that comes from the department, and so the department may have some additional comments related to that.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. Department?
Yeah, Representative Erickson, who is here from the department today to provide some insights there?
Chair Dabney, we don't currently have someone from MDE here, but I will send them the link and they can log in.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Bird. Representative Erickson, do you have another question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Richardson, Chair of Policy. I'm looking at Section 8 of Article 4 under Charter Schools and the Market Need and Demand Study. Would you comment on why that has been included now in so many areas of the Charter School Authorizer section to create a charter school, for example, or to do make other changes?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. And thank you, Representative Erickson, for the question. And the intent around the charter school piece is to ensure that you know, prior to beginning a new school or expansion or beginning a new pre-K program, that there be some element of a needs assessment done to establish the need for the program. It is information that we were able to vet within charter schools as well, and had no concerns communicated. But again, this is language that comes from the governor's bill, and the department may have more to add on to this, but it's really about ensuring that there is in fact some market analysis and market need that would be adopted before moving forward with an expansion that falls under that category.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam Chair, so this has been vetted with the Association for Charter Schools in our state?
Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have had conversations with charter schools about the charter school section, and have not received any concerns about the additional requirements on charter schools.
Chair Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's interesting because I have heard comments about it. My last question for Chair Richardson is, you know, there's a lot of new rulemaking in the educator licensing section, and I'm wondering if you have any idea what that's going to cost Pelsby.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for the question. I think that would be a better question directed to Pelsby. I'm not sure if Dr. Bailey is on the call.
Ms. Bird, is Dr. Bailey on the call?
Oh, we don't have Pelsby on the call either, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I do have one more question.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. And I see Adosh Uni is on board now, so maybe he can answer some of these questions. But so Chair Richardson, if Tier 3 teachers no longer need to take a content or pedagogy exam, how will their knowledge and skills be independently verified? Or are we just going to trust the teacher prep programs?
Mr. Rooney, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record before you respond. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. I believe that the question around content and pedagogy exams for licensure purposes would be more appropriately directed towards Pelsby, but I'm more than happy to answer any of the prior questions that Representative Erickson had regarding MDE's proposals. So I apologize. I'll have to ask for you to repeat some of those. I kind of missed some of them as I was logging on, but I'm more than happy to answer those.
Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got to get my bill here open again to my marked sections. So, Mr. Uni, the section about the hiring bonuses is a question that I had about why effectiveness is so important for those hiring bonuses. And by the way, I find that language, if this came from MDE, to be most most interesting, in that you pay half of the bonus when starting employment, and then after completing 4 years, if they've demonstrated teacher effectiveness, was what my question was about, and are not on an improvement plan, then or not being considered for termination, then they get the rest of the bonus paid. So I, you know, that's I don't know how much of an incentive that would be to someone who's coming in who has to be under the conditions of eligibility even to apply. But anyway,
Representative Erickson,
my question,
do you have a question
is teacher effectiveness.
Mr.
Why
Rooney.
Is it there and not in Tier 4?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I hate to disappoint. While we had a lot of language in the governor's bill that very much aligned with the Tokai bill that was carried by Representative Hassan, this section was actually not included in the governor's policy or budget bill around the, and I believe referring to the Come Teach in Minnesota hiring bonuses on line 84.192, I'm not sure to what, to 85.26. So I can't speak specifically to this provision, but if you have another question about some language that was in the governor's bill, I'm happy to answer that. I believe there was one about charter schools.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, no, I'll forego that question. I think I'll continue to talk to the charter school folks. But Mr. Looney, if you would be so kind as to find out why we have that, you know, that amusing, I'm going to call it amusing language about hiring bonuses. I just find it to be so contradictory to encouraging someone to come here when they get half of their bonus when they start, and then they have, you know, well, I expect them to be effective, absolutely. But then they get the other after 4 years. So anyway, I hope that's not going to discourage some from coming to fit those eligibility criteria. But thank you, Mr. Oney, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly, thank you, Representative Chair Richardson. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. And I just want to say thank you to Representative Richardson for such a comprehensive bill. I do have a question in Article 2, Section 18, and it's regarding American Indian mascots being prohibited. I'm just wondering about the timeline that school districts will be given. I do see that they can apply it for a written exemption, and that can be determined. But if they have to switch either a name, a logo, a mascot, what kind of a time frame are they given? And has any consideration been given for the cost? And the only reason I ask is I teach in a district that recently merged with another school district. And in doing so, we had to come up with a new mascot. And that was a crazy process. It was very, very fun, but challenging to come up with something new. And it took us many months to come up with a mascot, colors, a name, that type of thing. So I'm just wondering if you have any comment on like a timeline.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Sansi, for the question. And you are correct in terms of for anyone who would want to apply for to have consideration for being able to maintain a mascot that is within the that is within the bill language. The timeline on this, I am not seeing the date that this would the date that this one would become effective, but that is that's information that I can get and get back to you on.
Thank you very much. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Yulke. Oh, I'm sorry, thank Mr. Rooney. Can I hear your voice?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Rooney.
My apologies. I just wanted to provide a little bit more information on that, Representative Sansi and Chair Richardson. So this provision came from the department, and that is a good question about what the timeline is for how long the schools would have in terms of the transition period. The effective date, since there's no explicit effective date, I believe it's sometime in August when policy divisions actually or policy provisions passed actually take effect. But the process would be to seek an exemption explicitly from the Tribal Nations Education Committee or the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. And so that is a good question about should there be clarity around the timeline. But as we have it written, it would be a interactive process with the TNAC and MIAC. And so it would kind of they would set the expectations around what does the actual school need to do to be able to make the transition. Are they making a good argument about the reason for keeping the name? And then they can have that discussion between the bodies about what's the appropriate timeline. They would look at other things like impact to the community and students that the current name has, and possibly is this something that needs to be expedited in a faster way, or is this something that maybe can take a little bit more time? So that's how we envisioned it, that it would be more of a conversation about how it would go. But we could, if people see that this is a need to have a more clarified timeline, we're more than happy to have that conversation.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Samstein.
I do have one more question. Thank you. And certainly. Thank you so much for that, Mr. Uni. I appreciate that very much. I'm also wondering if there's any kind of funding consideration given to school districts that may have to make that switch, changing mascots or school uniforms or colors, perhaps. That's a costly kind of venture. And I'm just wondering if there's, what kind of opportunities may be out there for a school district to tap into if they have to make those changes.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandsteed, for the question. I think that you raise a number of good points in terms of, being proactive in terms of if there's a need to change. And I think that, those are pieces that we can continue to work on. And Mr. Uni, I don't know if you have more to add to that.
Mr. Uni?
Mr. Chair, Chair Richardson and Representative Sancy, the proposal that we've had does not have considerations for funding bridge for those that need to make the change. I think our priority is more upon the impact of what the current name and mascot is. However, I have heard that there are private entities out there that are helping schools bridge that gap. I think I've heard of Nike actually having an initiative to have schools change their mascots to a more appropriate name that isn't demeaning to American Indians and I think other cultures. But we can continue to work with the chair as well as you in terms of identifying any sources that are out there.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Chair Richardson for bringing forward such a comprehensive bill and knowing it inside and out. Having been someone who recently put together an education policy bill, I know how you have probably been living this, dreaming it, eating, drinking it for the last month or two. So thank you for knowing your bill. And I did the same thing as you did. I walked through it myself because that was another part of really hearing your own voice in the bill that you've worked hard on. So thank you. Thank you also for putting in the language around MTSS, the multi-tiered systems of support and social emotional learning, and especially the non-exclusionary discipline. All those pieces layered together really make our schools a more healthy, safe, and welcoming environment for all of our children. And I maybe, while I have Adosh Uni here, I'll ask him or you, Representative Richardson, to give a little bit more detail around the MTSS language that's in there and what it'll do for our schools and our kids.
Chair Richardson, can you help us with that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Youakim, for your questions. There was a stakeholder group that was deeply involved in the creation of the components of the MTSS, and I can have Mr. Uni expand more on that, but to the point that you were making in terms of really trying to create inclusive and welcoming school environments, we know that step one in terms of thinking through addressing the unacceptable disparities that we have and the opportunity gap that we have starts with having kids in the classroom. And so, this is an important part of getting, of ensuring that kids have an equitable opportunity to be in the classroom. And I don't know if Mr. Uni has more to add around MTSS.
Mr. Uni?
Mr. Chair, Representative Youakim, I think Chair Richardson did an excellent job. If there are any other questions that you have that you need me to support, I can answer that. But I think she did a good job.
Thank you. Chair Youakim.
No, Mr. Chair, Ms. Representative Richardson and Mr. Uni, thank you. I know I've been in contact with some of those groups that were in part of that stakeholder group, and I know they do appreciate it, and I think this is a great start. MTSS really works as a good umbrella to cover all those areas where we can bring more folks into making sure that all our kids have what they need. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we've gone through this overview, it really reminds me of our very first meeting here in Ed Finance where we heard from students. And one of the things I heard the students plead with this committee for was better support for their mental health. We've heard that time and time again, especially from student testifiers and parents, that their children are struggling with their mental health. So I really want to thank Chair Richardson for including so many provisions to increase mental health access in schools. And as Representative Joachim was speaking, it occurred to me that there are other aspects of this not specifically outlined in the mental health part of the bill that address student mental health. So I was wondering if Chair Richardson could maybe speak to some of the other aspects of how her bill improves student learning conditions and increases support for their mental health needs.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for the question. It's a really important one because we know that mental health needs were high before the COVID pandemic. They're high during the pandemic, and you know, and we're going to continue to see needs to meet students where they are from a mental health perspective post the pandemic as well. And some of the ways that we are really hoping to be able to support students is to ensure that there is more access to resources. The Representative Moeller's bill, for example, I think is a really important one in terms of being able to have districts have leadership around mental health to better build the infrastructure, to better build the infrastructure for within the district and for students, and really being able to think through innovative ways for collaborating with community. I think it's also really important in terms of from a mental health perspective when students are transitioning from one school to another to be able to continue to keep connections from a school-linked mental health perspective, and not to have to disrupt that relationship and restart a new one is going to be another important way that we are better able to support students. And around the curriculum additions for grades 4 through 12, providing education around the prevention of suicide and also self-harm, and ensuring that we are relying on information that comes directly from the commissioner or to use other evidence-based curriculums to ensure that we are able to do that safely within schools, I think is a really key piece too.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Richardson, for that question. I think it's really clear that you listened to students with this. I think not only everything you laid out, but even inclusion of ethnic studies and provisions around the Teachers of Color Act are good for students' mental health when they've talked about needing to see themselves reflected in the literature they read and the person teaching their class. That uplifts their self-esteem and mental health, too. So thank you so much for listening to students and educators on what we can do for students' mental health.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Erickson, you'd had a question for Pelsby, and Dr. Bailey is in the room now. Representative Erickson, you're muted.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Bailey, I was wondering what the rulemaking is going to cost Pelsby. I tried to get that question in the other day.
Dr. Bailey, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and then respond. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Elena Bailey, the Director of Education Policy at Pelsby. And thank you for asking that. We didn't get a chance to speak to this yesterday. We actually, because we do rulemaking on a continuous basis, we can roll these rulemaking projects into our existing schedule without additional cost.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chair. I just wanted to echo sentiments of Representative Jordan. I've yet to hear anything that doesn't make sense for the kids in our district and in our state. And also, I do remember the voices of the children, like the first day we were here. And a lot of this stuff is stuff that they asked us for. You know, when you talk about culturally competent, you use those words, culturally intelligent. Like, that's not in language throughout this body a lot. And I'm not just talking about here. I'm talking about throughout the entire house. Culturally intelligent, culturally competent teachers, and mental health providers. And I'm just so glad that you were able to, how can I say that? You slayed it. How about that? The presentation. How about that? It was pretty good. It was a pretty good presentation. And I think that it makes sense. This is makes sense policy, y'all. And this is what the work is. And I just want to uplift you and also to everybody here. We are the work, and the work we do definitely will affect our future. And so I hope we're investing wisely in our future, because these kids are definitely worth investing in. So I just want to say thank you so much to Chair Richardson, and you also, Chair Dabney, and the rest of the body. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. And Chair Richardson, Representative Thompson demonstrates his high fluency in Minnesotan when he says, you did a pretty good job. That's high praise, as you know. Seeing no other questions from members, Madam Chair, if you have any closing comments on your bill, now would be the time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill informationally, and I just want to take a moment to thank all of the people who made this possible, including staff who spent lots of hours with myself on birthdays and on weekends to help pull this together. And so definitely want to share appreciation for the staff and also for the Education Policy Committee, because we got here by working together to pull this together. We know that in Minnesota that the disparities are deep. And they're wide and they're persistent. We have some of the worst educational disparities within the United States. And so I am grateful to have the opportunity to work with you, Chair Dabney, and to ensure that we are focusing on our response to the COVID pandemic, but are also focused on ensuring that we are doing the work that we need to do to address the persistent racial disparities that we continue to see in education, be that the school discipline disparities that result in Black students and Indigenous students and students with disabilities not spending as much time in the classroom as other kids because they are being pushed out at disproportionate rates, the ability to be able to bring more mental health supports to our schools as well to support students who are in need of, who are experiencing challenges as a result of that, their mental health needs. I was really struck by not only the students who spoke about their mental health needs, but also hearing from the school counselors who would come in and talk about having hundreds, if you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 students on their caseloads. And so we know as a state, we have an opportunity to do more to really help support our students. And I think it's also really important to note that this is just a beginning, and we've got a lot more work to do to really move the needle on addressing disparities. And so I'm hopeful that we can continue to use the work of the House Select Committee on Racial Justice as a guide as we begin to do the work of trying to diversify our teaching workforce to ensure that our kids are going to have an equitable opportunity to be within schools, and to also ensure that we are preparing kids with a chance kids to have a full opportunity to meet their full potential. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for preparing the bill and presenting it here in committee today. Members, with that, we look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.